Hello, welcome to that 90s Wrestling Podcast. Wrestling Podcast takes you back to the glory years of the WWE, 1990s. Today, we're not reviewing WWE, because today we've gone uncensored with WCW, and today, my very, very special guest, she is the nemesis of DJ Storms, Bubba. How are you doing, Bubba?
I don't know if I love that being my title. It's true, but yeah, it's kind of undeniable at this point, isn't it?
To be fair, to be a nemesis, he would actually have to be on equal footing as you, and he's not.
He likes to think he has the upper hand in it, and you know what? It's so childish, the whole thing, but it gets my day in. I have two monitors set up for my work, so one is like Twitter and one is my actual work, so I just like do things in my off time, like when I'm waiting for an email to come in or something, so it's just, I get paid to do it, so it's fine.
Fair enough. Go. So yes, just tell everyone how long you've been a fan for and how long you've got into wrestling.
Well, interestingly enough, I got into wrestling by watching WCW. I hadn't watched any WWF at that point. I started watching it in around 96, just as like the NWO was becoming a thing. So I feel like that was like a good time for me to start watching it. I think if I'd watched it any sooner than that, I may not have continued. because both companies, like looking back, both companies were pretty shit before that. But yeah, around 96, and I only watched WCW through the Monday Night Wars until like end of 98, 99. So I was firmly in the WCW camp. I realize now that I was completely wrong to be in the WCW camp after, like, I mean, when it started, when the NWO started, and, you know, when WCW was at its best, it was good, but it did only last for, what, 2 years, maybe? 97 was the best, and by mid-98, it really started to, after, like, the finger poke and all that sort of stuff. I don't know why I kept watching it, but...
I think as well, over here, like UK and Ireland, because to watch WWE, you had to have Sky Sports. Not many of us had Sky Sports, and WCW, it used to come on like TNT, which, if I've got this right, it used to be on the same channel as Cartoon Network, and when that finished about 9 o'clock, it would turn into TNT, and then at Monday Nitro, which it would actually be, I think it was shown on a Friday, but that's how we used to watch it. So I was kind of the same. I've told everyone, like, I found out about wrestling, my father had the videotapes, so I used to watch, like, what I'm starting with my podcast, like, very early 90s WWF, and then I got into, same as you, WCW, like, Nitro's on every week, so I didn't really catch as much of WWF at the time, but then I think Channel 4 started showing some WWF, and, like, Sunday Heat, and that, like, brought me right back into it, and since then, yeah, my colours is WWF.
See, I lived in America. I was born in America and lived there until 98. And then whenever we moved here, you couldn't get WCW. Like, I had to stop watching it anyway because I couldn't find it here. I wanted to watch it, but I couldn't. And then in 99, I think, is when SmackDown started. And on Sky Sports, they played, like, the SmackDown highlights. They didn't play Raw, but they had SmackDown. So I would just catch up from that. So... that was sort of the only thing that I had. And then, as you said, Channel 4 had Heat and some... they only had it for, like, a year, I think, but they had some pay-per-views, and I remember watching The Invasion in 2001, I think it was. And I remember staying up really late to watch that, but, yeah, it was quite hard to watch, like, to find it to watch, and we didn't have Sky Sports, so I could only watch, like, SmackDown replays.
Yeah.
Were like cut before they would like have chair shots.
But I was just trying to work your accent out because it says you're based in Ireland. And when I first spoke to you, I was thinking she doesn't sound very Irish.
No, it's a really weird like hybrid accent. Some words they say are American, and some of it's a bit Belfasty. But it's weird. Everybody makes fun of me. Everybody that listens to my podcast, they make fun of me all the time, and obviously I love that.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught it. I interviewed Goldilocks from TNA. She was one of the first, well, she was the first knockout on TNA back in 03, 04. And she said the same thing. She says, I cannot work your accent out. And I said to her, I said, no one can. I said, I've lived literally all over the UK. Mm-hmm. And I've just picked up like a myriad of accents. So there's not one particular accent. So
yeah.
We're in the same boat, kind of.
Yep. But, when I get really angry, it goes quite American. Or
yeah.
Go one of two ways. When I get angry, sometimes it goes American or really, really Belfast. But when I'm drunk, yeah. I'm just pure Belfast.
Fair enough. Cool. Well, for everyone, like I said, we're reviewing Uncensored 99. This will be your last one, because this one is not going to be PG, and we are going to be going uncensored.
Yeah.
So that's your final one. It happened on March the 14th. It was in Louisville, Kentucky, in the Freedom Hall, and there was 15,930 people. In the rest of the media at the time, the number one movie at the box office was Analyze This. In the US music charts was Cher. Do you believe in afterlife? And in the UK was Britney Spears, Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Oh, great. Wow.
Yeah, this was a pretty good week for music. Because normally, I've been looking at the music charts, and in America in 1990, it was dominated by Mariah Carey. So I'm thinking, okay, we've got two banging tunes here.
Right.
In the video game world, we had King of Fighters 98, and the other game what just got released was the iconic game Pepsi Man.
Pepsi Man?
No one's heard of.
No.
I didn't know it existed until I released it.
Now I want it.
So, as we get into the show, we see an intro promoting the cage match between Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan for the WCW title. Stipulations for it, we'll get into it later on, but what we know at the minute, Hogan's title's up the line, on the line, and Flair has put up his presidency. If he loses, he will lose that and he'll be banned from WCW, but if Flair wins, he will win the title and he'll also be president for life. We'll see how that works out for him in 2 years' time.
Less than 2 years?
Yeah. As we get into it, we see Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Bobby Heenan. First thing I have to say, Bubba. First thing I have to say, I fucking hate Tony Schiavone.
Do you not like Tony Schiavone?
I think I have made so many notes for him. I hate him. I think he's that dry. When you watch it, Bobby Heenan hates him.
Yeah.
Bobby Heenan wants nothing to do with him.
There's a good moment. We'll probably get to it later, but there's a great moment in the middle of it where Bobby he turns his back on him and he, like, it's so awkward. He just sits there and is like, no. He just doesn't want to talk to him. But I am thankful that Mark Madden wasn't commentating because fucking cannot stand Mark Madden. I've had two Twitter beefs with him as well. Shocker.
Really?
I hate him. I cannot stand him. So
as
much as the commentary is sort of not great, it's better than when Mark Madden was doing it because he's fucking awful.
Fair enough. Well, as we get to our first match, it's for the Cruiserweight title. In his WCW debut, it's Mikey Ripwreck, and he's against Billy Kidman. Big boos for Ripwreck when he made his way to the ring.
He had no music. He had no music and just started walking, and everybody was booing him. And the look on his face as well was like, oh, stop booing me. But what do you expect?
Yeah, ACW guy in WCW, which we'll get to that later on as well. Yeah. Kidman comes out. To be honest, Bubba, I've always loved Kidman. I loved his fame, and I always thought he could have been a lot bigger than what he ended up being.
He was one of my favorites, and when they did the New Blood angle,
in
the following year, other than the fact that they had it the wrong way around and the New Blood should have been the baby faces, Kidman should have really broken out then, and I'm really sad that he never did. And when he did eventually go to WWE and stuff, he just sort of floundered, and it really baffled me because he could have been, he didn't have as much charisma as the likes of Jericho or any of the other cruiserweights, but he was really good. He was a really good worker. I loved him. He was one of my after Sting, he was probably my favorite whenever I was a kid.
Yeah, same here, to be honest. there's the podcast, OSW Review. I don't know if you've got around to listening to them.
No.
I've kind of ripped the gimmick off. They started off like WrestleMania 1, working their way through. Three Irish lads, they're great. I love them.
Right.
And they always say that they've got a thing they say. It's called My Boy. And right. it's like these wrestlers what will never get to the top, but you still cheer for them. Like, for example, like a Marty Jannetty or someone like that.
Uh-huh.
And Billy Kidman's one of my boys.
Right, okay.
I always cheered for him, but it was like, yeah, he's never going to get to the top.
No, he wasn't. He just, there was like sort of a lack of, his mic work wasn't the best. And not that he even really got that much, but there was just something missing. But like watching his matches, like I loved watching his matches. I thought he was great.
Yeah, and to be honest, this match was pretty good. One of the highlights I spotted is when the two of them was brawling to the crowd, and there was a guy taking a selfie with a disposable camera. I loved that. I thought, wow, you can tell it's the '90s.
Yeah, and, the crowd in like WCW shows are like, to me, seem like even more '90s than WWF ones, but like it's a bit cringe sometimes, but like I love it.
Yeah, it's definitely like it's time. It's definitely like the frat crowds, basically, like all like college kids. And how much would, you know, today's wrestling would love to be able to get them sort of crowds again. I can't see it happens, but yeah, that's what it was. It was just like college kids, and obviously you had some, you know, wrestling fans like older generations, but it was mainly just for college kids, and that's why during this time wrestling was so popular. It was mainstream.
It's one of those things that. Like, now, whenever people are like, oh, wrestling's still so, like, it's still going through, somebody said it's going through a boom period at the minute, and I'm like, have you seen the ratings? The ratings are going down, like, drastically, and this is such a nothing pay-per-view. Like, when you look at it now, you look at the card, you're like, why were half of these matches on this card on a pay-per-view? But the crowd was huge. Like, wrestling was massive at the time. And I don't think it'll ever go back to being like that. I think the wrestling itself is better now, but like, even though all these storylines and like these matches are shit, at least there was like sort of reasons for them. Like, you can see in the vignettes, you know, before the matches and stuff, you can see that at least there was a storyline. I find that now there's no storyline for anything. The matches are great, but you're not invested because you don't really care. You're like, who cares who wins?
Well, that's what it is, and I try to have this debate with people, and people say to me, oh, the Attitude Era is overrated. I'm like, yeah, in your opinion, it was overrated. And yeah, some of the things, they probably haven't aged really well, but what you got to understand, it's the most successful time of wrestling, and we're not even including the Nitro ratings at the same time.
Yeah.
But, and people just keep trying to say to me, yeah, but it was overrated. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, this was the most successful time.
It's overrated and stuff, but at the time, like, it really showed that the storylines were more important than the quality of the wrestling. And it was just such, like, it was very much of the time. You know, Jerry Springer and Car Crash TV was such a thing. And that's why this worked, is because it was just an extension of that. And then also because it wasn't, like, overly PG or anything, and now that it is. And I know AEW's trying not to be, but, like, there's something not clicking there.
Yeah, it's,
I think society being more like overly PC and whatever, and if anything's even slightly edgy, people are like, whoa,
yeah,
can't put a snake on someone. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's a joke, it really is. Yeah. Obviously, there's some things, you kind of have to be PC about, but other things it's like, people actually purposely looks for an excuse to be offended.
that is what it is, I think. You know, people just watch things and want to find something to be offended about, as opposed to actually being offended by it.
I saw the best one last night. Some people actually said Sony is racist because the new PlayStation's white on the outside.
No. Get out.
Yes. No, I'm being honest about this. Someone actually said that. I'm like, for fuck's sake, please get a life. Get laid.
Yeah.
They've all been
black before, but okay, this one's white, so obviously it's racist.
Exactly. Never mind, back to the wrestling.
Yeah.
But to be honest, this was actually a really good match. The end of the match came when, Ripper wrestled really well, but the finish of the match came when Riff Raff tried to powerbomb Kidman, who turned into a faceless, and then hitting the Shooting Star for the 1-2-3. And I wrote down, I thought, yeah, this is actually a great match.
Yep. I love the Shooting Star Press. It's one of my favorites. Kidman always did it really well. I thought it was a good match. I have my notes. I said, yeah, it was a good match. To me, it might have been the best one in this entire pay-per-view. So it was a good way to start.
Yeah, it went downhill from here. I'll be honest, because I was impressed with Rip Rec, because I'll be honest, I haven't really watched a lot of ECW stuff, and I've missed a lot of Mikey Rip Rec stuff. I got some stuff, what he'd done towards the end in like 2000, 2001, but a lot of his early stuff I've missed, and I was watching, I was like, he could actually wrestle really well to say he started off as like a ring boy, just putting the ring together and stuff like that, so yeah. I was impressed. A good match. Next thing we see is the Stevie Ray against Virgil promo. Well, Vincent, but I'll just call him Virgil. It's the promo for the Harlem Street fight. The winner will be the leader of the NWO Black and White. Who gives a fuck?
I have written in my notes here, literally no one cares about, I have Virgil as well. Literally no one cares about Virgil and Stevie Ray. That was my only note. Yeah. The second note I have says, why is this on a pay-per-view?
Yeah, this isn't exactly a big pay-per-view spectacle you want to see.
No.
But, we see another quick promo hyping up the cage match, and then we'll go back to ringside, and it's Virgil v. Stevie Ray. First thing I did notice, Stevie Ray was fucking massive.
Yeah. Yeah, huge.
He was a big guy, but not long after the match started, they actually started brawling into the stands, and then Stevie basically controls the match pretty much 99% of it. And finish comes when both men are knocked out. Horace Hogan runs down to ringside, throws in a slapjack, says he doesn't care who he wins because he's the leader. And then Virgil picks it up, tries to hit Stevie, misses, and then Stevie kind of hits like a pedigree to get the 1-2-3.
Yep.
There wasn't much else I could write about this.
No one cares. Why is this on a pay-per-view? And Horace Hogan, enough said. It just shows how like unimportant the NWO was by this time. Like 99, it just started being nothing because all the good guys, like the big players, were all in the Wolfpack. Nobody cared about Black and White at this point. If you're arguing over who's the leader of NWO Black and White, and it's between Vincent and Stevie Ray, and then Horace Hogan comes down and declares himself the leader, no one fucking cares. No. that's when you know the NWO isn't really important anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, we see Chris Jericho backstage. He's got the promo on Perry Saturn for their dog collar match later on the night, and next match we see it's Kevin Nash against Rey Mysterio. Kevin Nash is out with Lex Luger and Elizabeth, who's looking hotter as always. I just had a thing for Elizabeth growing up. I don't know why.
Can't blame you. Yeah.
And then Mysterio comes out with no mask. How much of a baby face has he got?
I know, literally. They had the promo, I think, at the start. It was at the very start, like the weird video I think he lost his mask in a match against Nash, or was for Elizabeth Hare?
Yeah.
It was Elizabeth Hare versus Mysterio's mask.
Oh, right. I didn't know that. I know it was the mask, but I didn't know it was Hare as
well. Yeah, it was Miss Elizabeth Hare versus Rey Mysterio's mask. So when he came out, he just looked like a 15-year-old kid. Nash just looked bored from the minute he hits that ramp to the minute he leaves. He just looked so fucking bored.
He did.
I think it was sort of known at the time that he didn't really care. He knew he was just getting paid. He just did whatever he had to do. I didn't really understand where the whole storyline was going, because it was like Mysterio beat him previously, and then he had like matches with like Bam Bam Bigelow and stuff, and I didn't really understand the point in this match, really. I didn't really get it. It was the typical Nash WCW match, but
Yeah, beginning the match, like Ray was all hyped up, and then he literally just ran into a big boot.
Pretty much, and, yeah. Nash just beat him up for most of it. He came back a few times, hit a few things on him, but like at no point did I ever think that Mysterio was gonna win.
No. Well, there was a point there when Ray hit like a blatant low blow on the ref, and I was thinking, how come there wasn't a DQ? Then I realized, like, oh, yeah, it's uncensored.
Yeah. So, which they made a really big deal of at the start when me and Gene was like, WCW takes no responsibility for anything that happens uncensored. It's like, all right. Yeah. Because I did the same thing. I was like, that was like the most obvious low blow ever, maybe. But then I also was like, oh, yeah, this is uncensored. So that's allowed to happen.
But yeah, and the match comes, he hits the Bronco Buster, runs the ropes, what Luger trips him up, big boot, and then, yeah, Jackknife wins for Kevin Nash, 1-2-3, so, just like you said, Nash just looked so bored, he was like, why am I in this match, because you know he doesn't like, as he calls it, the Finilla Midgets to begin with, yeah. So, I can only imagine what was going through his head during this match.
The way he hit the Jackknife powerbomb as well, he let him go from, like, when he lifted him up, he just let him fall from the, like, it wasn't even... He didn't even really try to protect him. I just think he cared that little about the match. But it was really obvious. His selling was also really bad. Every time Ray hit something on him, his selling was really awful. It just wasn't a good match.
Yeah, that's that. But next up we see a trilogy of ECW promos. You got Raven, Sandman, and Bam Bam. And then, all I kept thinking in my head was ECW.
Yeah. It was weird the way they did these, like, promos, because they weren't, like, the way it happens now, obviously, is the promo happens before the match that's going to happen, but all the promos were in, like, a weird order. Like, I thought it was going to open with Nash and Mysterio, because, like, the promo for Nash and Mysterio happened, and then Mikey Whipwreck came out, and it was the same thing here, where it was, like, the ECW thing, and I was like, okay, expecting that to be the next match.
Yeah, well, that's what that's the production of WCW. No end of wrestlers, like, for example, Giant, like Big Show, for Chris Jericho, they've all said, like, when they left WCW and, like, go to WWE, they said, the first thing, well, you know, is just the difference in production. They said it's night and day. WWE, WWF, obviously, they said they are so organized. They said WCW was just like a madhouse behind. And you can see that watching the show. Like you said, the promos, there'll be, like, two or three segments before the match of the promo, and it makes no sense.
So I was expecting the ECW like triple threat match to happen, and then the Jerry Flynn and Ernest the Cat one happened. I just thought it was weird. I didn't. And the other thing is, like, it's usually like to recap if anybody has missed anything that's happened on like Nitro or whatever, you know, to recap when you're going to start watching the match. But this felt like it was like. And with Jericho, why is he cutting a promo during the pay-per-view that people have already bought? Like, it didn't really make sense to me, if you know what I mean. He's sitting there talking to Mark Madden. Mark fucking Madden, who I hate, by the way. You glossed over that, but I had in my notes. Mark Madden, I fucking hate this guy. He gets cut off, thank God. But he does go to, like, ask Jericho a question, and then it cuts to the Nash Mysterio.
Yeah. He's still pretty good friends with Jericho these days, by the way.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not really a massive Jericho fan either. I can respect that he is a great wrestler, but I really don't like Chris Jericho as a person.
Yeah, if you say that on Twitter, you know how unpopular that will be to say, but I kind of agree. I used to love him growing up, and like him in the ring, he's one of the best, but I think he values himself too high, and I've always said that. I think he thinks he's Hulk Hogan, for example. And a lot of wrestling fans, I've always said it's always great to have your own personal favourites, but to say he belongs on the Mount Rushmore, I'm like, that's just fucking crazy.
You said there, he's one of the best, but to me, he's nowhere near the best. I wouldn't have him on my Mount Rushmore. Yes, he's had good matches and stuff, but, like, I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is. But he genuinely thinks he is the best wrestler that has ever existed.
And
I don't think he is.
And I've never really considered him a true main event wrestler. I've always thought he was that upper mid card, sometimes main event, like B pay per views, not on the WrestleMania, for example. That's what I've always thought of him. I like Chris Jericho. I do. I've got two or three of his books. I love reading them. I do, but his AEW thing is just ego trip, to be honest, to make himself the main guy, which fair play to him, but yeah, that's a story for another day. We'll probably get back to Jericho later on. But yeah, like I said, next we see it's Jerry Flynn against the Cat and Sonny Uno in a handicap match. First thing I wrote down, Jerry Flynn must be WCW's Steve Blackman.
Yeah, I think that too. To be honest, this wasn't actually that bad of a match if Sonny Uno hadn't been there. He just annoyed the fuck out of me the whole time.
Well, I'll tell you what was bubblegum. So, I've always thought in my head, like, I'm no big expert booker or anything like that. You know, I'm just a guy who watches wrestling. But to me, the reason to do a handicap match is to put the odds against, like, the face, for example. He's the one person normally. And normally you would have that because the handicap, the tag team, would be tag teaming all the time to, like, and, you know, cheap moves, keep tagging in and out to dominate it. That's what the purpose is. But when you watch this match, the Cat is just dominating him completely by himself.
Yeah.
And when Jerry Flynn does get the win at the end, which happens because there was a botch on the Irish whip and that he runs into, by mistake, and Flynn gets a pin out of it, even though the Cat does actually break up but still gets counted. It felt like that Jerry Flynn was just lucky. He wasn't like a plucky underdog or anything. And if anything, the Cat looks like he could just dominate the match completely by himself, which he actually did.
Yeah. It was weird because it was a handicap match, but every time Sonny Ono did something when like Jerry Flynn was on the outside, he like backed off like to the referee, even though he didn't need to, because again, it's uncensored. So he wouldn't have been disqualified or anything anyway, because it was a handicap match. So it was just weird, but then like him trying to distract and stuff, I'm like, you don't need to do that because you're in the match as well. It just didn't seem like he was necessary. And to be honest, I just wrote, Ono was annoying, particularly annoying.
Well, he's best friends with Bischoff, so that's probably why he's got a job.
Yeah.
Next up, so yeah, just a quick match, and yeah, that was it. There was nothing to write home about.
It was okay. It wasn't a bad match. It was okay.
It wasn't a bad match. It was just that a lot of it didn't make sense. The fact
it
that
it was a nothing cat... match. It didn't. Again, it's one that I'm like, why was this on a pay per view? There was nothing at stake. There was nothing. There's no real build to it. It didn't. You know, I didn't see the purpose in it. And I feel like that's what happened a lot in these WCW pay-per-views at the time, is they were matches that could have been on Nitro.
Well, what I've done as well, I thought, because a lot of these stories that happen tonight, it makes no sense. So I thought, I know what I'll do for 2 minutes. I'll check out what happened on Nitro the next night. So I gave the next night's Nitro a watch. So I thought, right, where did Jerry Lynn go from here on the next night after his big win? Yeah, he lost straight away to Haku.
Right, okay.
So he did, that push was very quick. But next we see Benoit and Malenko. They cut a promo on Barry Windham and Kurt Hennig. So, but that match ain't happened. Even though they've just cut the promo, that match ain't going to happen for another 3 or 4 segments.
Didn't you think that was weird? Didn't you think, like, because when I was watching it, I was like, I didn't remember that that was the way that they did it. I can't remember if that was the way they always did it, but I like watching this,
probably
I
was
like, what? Why is this not the next match?
It probably was, to be honest. So I haven't watched WCW pay-per-views for a long time. So if me and you carried on doing some of this, like in the future, we'll probably realize, be like, yeah, that's actually how they done it. No wonder they lost the fucking war. But yeah, we finally get the ECW triple threat match. Bam Bam Sandman. Raven comes out to his WWF theme, which was a nice surprise because I love that theme.
Did you notice Hardcore Hack's theme was actually Mongo's theme?
I didn't notice. Mongo's music? Was it Mongo's music?
Yeah, it used to be Steve McMichael's music. And also, I fucking hate the name Hardcore Hack. hardcore Hack. He's the Sandman.
Hack. Oh, just rude. I think that's the nickname he's actually got, Hack, because I've heard, you know, when I watch shoot interviews, I've heard a few people actually call him Hack.
It's so weird to me to hear him see him be hardcore Hack. Because when I looked at this, like, before I actually watched it, I just looked up what the card was, and I was like, who the fuck is Hardcore? Oh, yeah. That's the Sandman.
Cool. Raven comes out with his WWE theme, and he comes out with his sister Chastity. I've got no idea who Chastity was, and I had a quick Google search after this, and yeah, she was gone in, like, 3 or 4 shows. So, yeah, it was a small debut. Start of the match comes, she actually brings a dustbin full of weapons, or as you call them, a dumpster.
Yeah.
Raven hits he does actually hit a decent drop up toe on Sandman, like onto the trash can. ECW chants from the fans. I thought, yeah, that's exactly what you want on WCW pay-per-view. ECW chants.
I noticed that, and then did they try to, like, kind of edit them out at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah. They just everything didn't want them saying ECW. But yeah, that's kind of, well, when you have three ECW guys in a match, you're you know, they should expect that anyway.
You're asking for it. Yeah. You're asking for it.
But I noticed that they did try to, like, but they couldn't because the commentary is still going, so I could still hear, like, faint EC dubs while they were talking. Yeah. And then, like, awkward silences.
Well, my God, there was a, what else happened? Sandman brings to the table, and Bam Bam tries to powerbomb Sandman.
He tries to powerbomb him through. The table doesn't break, and then break. You know, sort of, yeah.
So Bam Bam doesn't fit through it. And all you can do, like, and all you can hear, like, after he belly flops him to break it, all you can hear is Bobby Heenan laughing and sarcastically say, oh, this is great.
I did laugh. I felt
you give up with WCW.
I was really surprised it didn't break the first time, but at least Bam Bam, like, you know, improvised and just did it anyway, instead of sort of just sitting there awkwardly or anything. Yeah. But yeah, it happens with tables sometimes.
Yeah.
I thought this match was messy. It was like a WCW version of an ECW match. It was just a lot of weapons being used, a lot of headshots, a lot of things hitting people's heads, a lot of chair headshots and stuff that I, like, watching it now, I'm like, oof, oof, CTE.
Yeah. there's a point where, as well, when Raven, he tapes Sandman's wrists with some tape, but they just break instantly. Bam Bam gets another table, climbs a turnbuckle, but then that Chastity there, she comes out of, like, a linen basket. She gets the fire extinguisher and sprays it in his eyes, and he falls through the table. Swerve, bro. She turns on Raven and sprays Raven in the eyes with it. And then she headbutts him in the group, and it allows Sandman to get the win.
And he's meant to be her brother, and she headbutts him in the nuts. I just thought it was odd. Like, I thought it was weird, but this was WCW booking. There always had to be, like, a swerve finish for anything.
We was given a reason the next night on Nitro.
Oh, really? Oh, what was it?
Yeah. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, I do.
So, WCW was also doing the WCW Nitro parties at the time.
Okay.
And they was in, like, Mexico, Cancun, I think they was in, or somewhere like that. They were somewhere else. Anyway, they had this, like, and like I said, it's definitely late 90s. You had this host with, like, the blonde tips on the edge of spike hair, and he had, like, a leather jacket on. I thought, yep, definitely the late 90s, early 2000s. Yep. And he's around this nightclub, there's a few of the Nitro girls, and he says, and we've got, you never know who turns up, and he looks at Raven, and Raven's there. I thought, Raven, I couldn't imagine a more unsociable person to be at a party. And he interviews him, and he says to him, what happened last night? Raven's like, well, I'm kind of not surprised she turned on me. I mean, I did set her on fire when we were kids.
What?
So, apparently that's the reason she turned on him. It was like years of pent-up aggression after being what do you call it, burnt alive by him.
Oh, with a fire extinguisher. Right, okay, yeah. I get it. All right.
So, okay.
Who wrote that?
You can't blame Russo because he wasn't here. I blame it on Bischoff. Well, then again, every time Bischoff gets challenged, he says, oh, it's the booking committee. So you probably blame Kevin Sullivan or someone like that.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was the end of that. Next, like we said, we see Tony Schiavone today and Bobby Heenan. But while Tony's talking, Bobby Heenan just turns his back on them.
Yeah. I just thought it was like so awkward. Because he, like, what did he turned around and, like, looked at the crowd or something, and Tony Schiavone said something to him. He was like, he, like, chastised him for doing it, and then he just completely turned his back and just sat like that. Yeah. He was like, okay. So awkward.
I listened to that Tony's podcast he done with Conrad Thompson, and he was like a Bobby Heenan episode. The reason I listened to it, because I love Bobby Heenan. He's my favourite manager. He's my favourite colour commentator of all time.
Yeah.
I love. And he said the reason they broke apart, because they said they did not get along, and he said one of the reasons was that him and his wife was out for a meal. Bobby was there with his wife, and Bobby tried to invite him to, like, to go for some food or for a drink, and Tony just, like, ignored him. So he actually said that it was his own fault, really. That's why they never got along. But I just wrote down Tony Schiavone is a bit of a cunt.
Yeah.
So I just don't like him.
I don't mind him, like, I don't really care about him as a person, and to be honest, like, his Twitter annoys me as well. I think he's also very full of himself, but on the mic, he didn't really, he was okay, but some, I feel like towards the end of WCW, you could just tell that he really hated everything about it, whereas, you know, at least try and make it seem like you want to be there, or try and hold it together and make it seem like it makes sense. I feel like somebody that was really good at their job would be able to do that. But I think anything that went wrong in WCW, like, Tony Schiavone made it worse. He would point out things and make it worse. And I, you know, I always noticed that and just thought, right, okay, maybe that's not what you should be doing.
He'll try later on. I wrote down that he tries later on, because believe me, when he's Golden Boys turns up, he tries. So we'll get back to that. next up, we see it's the lumberjack strap match. Fucking hell, WCW had an obsession with straps.
Lumberjack was Haku. Just their thing. A gimmick. Anything that was a gimmick match, you know, couldn't just be a lumberjack match. It had to be a lumberjack strap match.
Yeah. the Lumberjacks was Haku, Hugh Morris, Kenny Chaos, Kendall Windman, Norman Smiley, and Gentleman Chris Adams. Four Horsemen comes out, Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit, with what I wrote down the porno theme. Don't you think it sounds like a porno?
Yeah.
I remember playing, I forgot when I heard it. It was the first time I heard it after many years. I think it was like a WWE 13 or WWE 12, like on the place. And the theme hit, do, and I'm like, sounds like a porno.
You're saying a lot about yourself there. What porners do you watch?
Hey, how was your... I was young once. Like, I don't watch it anymore.
But do you pay for Sonny's OnlyFans?
No, oh, God. Back in 96, I probably would.
I just did a podcast last night. Our latest episode of Muted was on Sonny and her breakdown. Not just her overall one that we can tell she's been having for 20 years, but, like, her racist rants and her trying to flog her OnlyFans, and I'm like, who would pay for that?
I actually emailed her the other night.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I thought, why, controversy creates cash. I wonder if I can get her on the podcast for an episode. She said, in fact, she doesn't do any podcasts anymore. I thought, yeah, but what if I pay you?
She obviously needs the cash for her meth addiction.
it's so fucking sad. Like, she was on top of the world at one point, and then, like, it went quickly downhill for her. It's amazing when you think about it.
She was literally the most searched person on, like, AOL or whatever in the late 90s, which, you know, if you say that now, like, that's, like, a big thing. That's, and again, that's how, like, big wrestling was at the time, and now, whew, now she's hashtagging white power on Twitter.
She said the biggest mistake in her career, she turned down their play. And, like, she turned down, like, it must have been millions, you know what I mean? Like, how much they offered there, and she turned down. And obviously, Sable got the gig, and Sable was still fit and healthy, you know what I mean? You know, mentally sound and everything like that. Then you look at Sunny, and she's flogging herself off for, like, $5 or something. So, sad. Hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Isn't it?
Enough of the porno theme. The tag team champions is up. Barry Windham and Kurt Hennig. as they get to the ring, Arn Anderson comes down. Tony Schiavone has an orgasm when he comes down. He takes gentleman Chris Adams' place. And, yeah, thing I noticed as well, Dean Malenko, he was so tiny compared to Barry Windham.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I love Dean Malenko, by the way. He's, like, one of my favourite technical wrestlers. I just think he was amazing. And I was really sad he never, like, became bigger. Again, I think it was, like, sort of he kind of lacked a character, really. But in ring, he was just incredible.
He was getting on a little bit as well, time he got to, I don't know how old he was, but time he got to WWF, he was pretty much at the end of his career anyway. I did enjoy the 007 gimmick they gave him when he was like James Bond. He just kept wrestling the women all the time.
He had a really good match with Lita.
Oh, that was great. That was a great story. That was a great segment with Lita as well.
Wasn't he like stalking her or something? Or something like that. But I remember they had a match and I was like in love with Lita at the time. Just thought she was the best thing ever. So watching her wrestle him, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah, it was a fairly good storyline, and he was actually entertaining, but then, like, he quickly moved into, like, production and stuff, and he's still doing it today. He's in AEW now, so he's still doing well for himself. The match, as it goes on, Hennig has Dean in the sleep hold, and Anderson keeps cheering on Dean. Hennig basically goes, tells Anderson to go and fuck himself, which I enjoyed. And, end of the match come when Arn Anderson, he hits Hennig with a tire iron while the ref is distracted. And I don't know why that mattered anyway, because it's uncensored. Benoit hits a diving headbutt, 1-2-3, and new tag champs. Was it a bad match? But I know everything tonight is gimmicks.
It's a lumberjack strap match. And was it I think it was Malenko, or it was one of the two of them, slaps Hennig. He slaps him, and then he leaves the ring. And it's like, when it's a lumberjack match, you don't want to be leaving the ring unnecessarily. But he keeps rolling out of the ring, and then the guys are, like, hitting him. And I'm like, isn't the point that you're, like, thrown out of the ring? And, you know, that's then the lumberjacks are going to hit you and whatever. But it didn't make sense that he kept rolling out of the ring. And it was the fact that it was over a slap, and I was like, oh, come on. It wasn't like, you know, he, like, hit him over the ropes or hit him out, you know. It was, he slapped him, and then he rolled out himself to get hit with the straps. It didn't make any sense.
That's WCW.
But it was just a stupid gimmick match. It didn't, like, again, it just added nothing to it anyway. Arn Anderson there to have the tire iron, I guess. But, like, again, it didn't really make a lot of sense. But nothing in WCW at this point really did.
I mean, the four of them was in the ring. I'm thinking, why not just have a straight 2-on-2, you know, tag team match? It would have been a pretty good match, the four guys what was in the ring. But, WCW. Next up, we see Jericho against Perry Saturn dog collar match. Jericho comes out to break the walls down, which surprised me.
Yeah.
And Ralph is with him. Saturn comes out. He's got yellow contacts on, and he's wearing a dress from the Marilyn Manson collection.
Yep, I have. What the fuck is Saturn wearing?
I didn't know he had this gimmick in WCW. I had no
idea. I don't remember it either.
I know he had a little bit of a gimmick, like in WWE, after he like basically killed that jobber, and he pretended to have like a concussion sort of angle, and he kept wearing dresses. But I had no idea this gimmick in WCW. This completely like escaped me. And
I
like Saturn as well, because Saturn, I always thought, had like a really good look as well.
Yeah.
And so that's how it was. Jericho sends Ralphus to the back because he refuses to wear the dog collar. So nice spots on the outside when Saturn's on the outside while Jericho's on the apron, and Saturn basically pulls the chain, and it causes Jericho to fly right into the guardrail. What else is it? Jericho hits line tamer, but then Saturn gets the chain around Jericho's neck, hits a Death Valley driver, gets a two count. Jericho manages to get the chain off, wraps his body around, and it goes for a top rope splash, misses, and then another Death Valley driver. And surprisingly, Saturn gets the win, which this was actually a bit of a shock to me when I watched it, because like I said before, I haven't watched his pay-per-view, so this was a surprise to me.
Yeah. It wasn't one of Jericho's better WCW matches. I felt they were... It seemed like they didn't really know what to do with the chain for a lot of it. They kept trying to do things, and it felt like it took a lot of time for them to get there. I didn't really write much about this. I wrote that it was pretty boring, to be honest.
It was. Like I said, I ran through that match quickly because there wasn't much to write about. Next, we see Rip Wreck, and he talks about his match and that, so just a little promo from him. But like we said earlier, I think at the minute that is still match of the night, and I enjoyed it.
Yep.
Next, we see it's the TV title, Scott Steiner. He's accompanied by Buff Bagwell, and then we see Booker T. So in my head, I thought, right, Booker T and Scott Steiner, this should be a nice match.
Once it started?
Then the bell rang.
Some bits were okay, like they had a bit of a brawl, but like, how long did it take for that match to start?
Well, yeah, I mean, the one thing I did write down, I love how Scott Steiner just basically shit talks the fans.
Oh,
wow. Match goes on. Booker hits like a reverse crossbody to go for a pin, but Buff Bagwell like pulls them out. They start fighting outside, and what else happened? Yeah, Steiner comes from behind and sends Booker to the barricade, take control. They fight in the crowd for a bit. Scott gets him back into the ring, chokes Booker on the ropes, big gorilla press, hits a belly-belly, two count. Booker hits Harlem side slam, takes control, spinneroony, axe kick. End of the match comes when Booker climbs the top rope, but Buff trips him. Steiner holds Booker T, so Buff can hit him with the chair, but he misses, hits Scott. And yeah, Booker T takes out Buff Bagwell and pin Scott Steiner. We've got a new TV champ. I know I flew for that match, but that was what was there.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It took a really long time to start. It was boring. And yet again, WCW booking that something had to happen for like a swerve finish. But
yeah,
that is pretty standard. If you're going to watch any more WCW, that's pretty standard.
For everyone who's listening, why we're laughing randomly, we've just had a half an hour tangent on AEW. that's a show for the future. So,
bonus episode.
So we see another promo, the world in the cage this time. Is it Bruce Buffer or is it Michael Buffer? I get mixed up which one's the WCW guy and the UFC guy.
I don't even know. I'm
so,
like, lost.
Well, put it this way, Bubba. Every time this guy makes the announcement for the main event, he got, like, $500,000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Okay, yes. I know who you're talking about. Yes, the dude. Yes, the Let's Get Ready to Rumble dude.
Yeah, that's right. Typical
WCW overpaying for shit they didn't need.
No.
So, yeah, we've got a first Blood
but,
Steel
hold
cage
on, match. But they had that, so that's why Ready to Rumble was called Ready to Rumble. So who knows what it would have been called otherwise. That great classic of a movie.
I haven't watched that since being, like, probably 10-year-old.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I watched it not that long ago. I couldn't finish it.
I smell a Patreon.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, Evex, the announcement. So, yeah, we've got a first Blood Steel cage match. No, it's barbed wire at the top. I don't know. We'll go through it. Well, they said pinfalls don't count, and it's just escaping the cage. But we'll get to it. As we said earlier, if Ric Flair wins, he'll be the new WCW champion, and he'll be the WCW president for life. If Hogan wins, he'll retain the belt, but Flair will be banished from WCW for life. Flair's out first. He's a 13-time champ at this point, and now this is where I get confused with the match, right? Going into the match, I presume Ric Flair was the face. He gets on the mic, tells the fan to shut up.
Yep.
And he tells Charles Robinson, or as I call him, Little Nate, he calls him not to stop the match over a scratch and to stop the match at his own discretion.
Which was a mistake. Well, not for Flair, but in general.
Yeah. Hulk Hogan comes out, and he comes out to the Wolfpack theme, which it just looks so odd on him coming out to that theme.
Yep.
And he's got the WCW title, what's got the red spray paint on it, the Wolfpack colours, and it just weird him being in the Wolfpack. I know it's still the end of Europe.
Didn't his, gear, wasn't it, half white and half red?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it didn't really, make any sense. I actually forgot until I watched this. I forgot he was ever in the Wolfpack.
I just...
because well, I happened? Forgot that was what the finger poke did. It, made, the Wolfpack, the, superior NWO, and that he was in it. I completely forgot because I just always associate him with the black and white NWO. So, yeah, when he came out to the Wolfpack theme, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they called themselves the NWO Elite. I might be wrong.
Well, there were 40 different versions of the NWO, so yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'll tell you what I did write down as well, because so at the minute, on this podcast, normally I've been reviewing the WWF shows from start of the decade, so 1990. Uh-huh. The size difference between Hulk Hogan 1990 to on this show, it's staggering.
Is he?
He's so much smaller on this show compared to It's like he hasn't got them 24-inch pythons anymore. They're probably about 19-inch pythons, I would say. We get a weird theme as the cage gets lowered.
Yeah.
I was expecting the boogeyman to come out.
Yep.
At the start of the match, Hogan overpowers Flair to start the match, and the fans start cheering for Hogan, so it just left me more and more confused who the fuck the face was in this match.
I thought Flair was supposed to be the face.
Yeah.
Hogan was supposed to be the heel, but I think the crowd just love Hogan for whatever reason. Don't even start me on that. But yeah, I had the same thing where I was confused as to who was in which role.
It was just confusing. I was just trying to think, is it Hogan or Flair? But it just kept going on there. Hogan puts a figure four leg lock on Flair and just dominates the match. That was the other thing as well. He's got the figure four leg lock on, and I think Flair gets to the ropes, but the ref ref breaks up.
Yeah.
Or he said that there was no submissions in this match. So I'm not making it up, right? People will be thinking, does he know what's happening? And it's not because I've got my notes mixed up. It's just for the fact they changed the rules as the match went on.
Yep.
Hogan dominates the match, does a 10 punch in the corner. Fans are cheering for him as he does it. He bites Ric Flair's forehead, and that causes him to bleed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, right, so it's the first blood match. Ric Flair's bleeding. Right, Hogan's the winner.
But the ref says, nope, what do you call it? It's just a scratch.
He was using his discretion.
Oh, it's just, have you seen Monty Python? Holy Grail. It is, with a scratch.
Yeah.
So, ref carries on. And then Hogan hits the big boot, or as Tony Schiavone called it, the big foot.
I didn't even notice that.
Leg drop covers Flair. Ref counts one, but then he stops because he says there's no pinfalls. Remember that, everyone. There's no pinfalls in this match.
So he's already bleeding.
Flair's
already bleeding.
He's bleeding in the first blood match. And
Robinson does a one count and then realizes, oh, wait, no, there's no pinfalls.
Ric Flair gets the brass knuckles out and then he hits Hogan, which causes Hogan to bleed, but still no belt in his first blood match.
David with Flair comes out and he's got Tori Wilson with him. She looks stupidly young on this night as well.
Yeah.
He cheers on Hulk Hogan, and like I said, he must have been part of the NWO. Hulk hugs up though, leg drop, and the ref counts the one but then stops again. And yeah. Ric Flair begs Hogan not to hit him. I'm thinking, what a valiant babyface.
Yep.
Low blow by Flair, and Anderson runs out and he attacks David Flair. I wrote down at this point, Tony Schiavone is the biggest fucking mark for the Four Horsemen.
Yep. He loves Arn Anderson.
He marked out that much. In my head, I thought, right, do you remember when Michael Coe turned heel back in 2011, it might have been?
Mm-hmm.
And he used to be a fanboy for The Miz.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Schiavone would make Michael Coe blush with how much he was fangirling over the Four Horsemen. It made me fucking sick.
Which didn't even make sense, because it wasn't like... Arn wasn't in it, like, in that lumberjack match?
Yeah. Arn Anderson's just trying to get a paycheck. He's someone who's overrated. I will receive your hate. Give it to me. I don't give a fuck. He's overrated. As we keep going, Arn Anderson passes Ric Flair the tire iron. Hits Hogan with it. Figure four. Hogan's shoulders are down. And we get a free count in the first blood match, cage match. What's had two pinfall attempts already, but this time the pinfall's counted. What the fuck?
So it was the same spot of Arn Anderson with a tire iron again in the same pay-per-view. There wasn't supposed to be any pinfalls. Flair was bleeding quite profusely for the majority of this match.
Yep.
Because once he got busted open, Hogan, like, dragged his head across the cage multiple times, which made him bleed even more. Like, that should have been it. I didn't really understand why this was even a first blood match then. Why couldn't it have just been a cage match? But it was another thing to have, like, one count and then stopping him because he realized he shouldn't have been counting. And then that it was a figure four leg lock, which is a submission, but Hogan's shoulders were down, and then suddenly a pinfall.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't make any fucking sense. And this match was built up so much, and they made so much, like, about it, the cage, and, like, all of the promos were showing, like, them, like, building the cage.
Yeah.
For the cage not really to be that much of a part of it, other than him sort of raking his face and then taking the barbed wire off the top of it.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, there wasn't, like, you really thought the kids was going to have, like, play more of a part in it or something, but it just, like, the finish was just so dumb.
Well, that was it, because they said, right, it's a first blood steel cage match, and I think they actually said there's no pinfalls, and you have to escape. There wasn't one escape attempt for the whole match, and when someone did bleed, it wasn't counted. It just made no sense. Arn Anderson gets Flair out the ring. We don't see them.
I didn't think he had to escape because it was a first blood match, so it should have just been whoever bled first.
Yeah.
But then didn't even happen.
Or if it was just like, right, because I know back in the day they used to do cage matches where it was just pinfalls, that the cage was there so no one would escape. So even if they'd done that, I'm like, fair enough. But then they stopped two of Hulk Hogan's pinfall attempts. But it ended where, well, they go, Ric Flair's new champion. We don't even see him pose with a belt because Arn gets him out the ring. And the camera just stays on Hogan, and that's how the pay-per-view ends. I did check out the following night at Nitro, though.
And how did that go?
To get some resolution of what happened. So, in a throwaway comment, Tony Schiavone said, right, the reason last night happened, because on January 4th, the WCW was tarnished with a finger poke ado. So WCW decided to fight fire with fire, and we had to screw Hogan to get the belt back. So it was fair. And then Ric Flair came out later on the night with Charles Robinson and Anderson and some ladies. And Charles Robinson said it was at my discretion to end the match. I believe that Hulk Hogan couldn't carry on the match, and I ended it because I was fearful for his kids and his family. So I'm watching this, so I'm like, okay, so it's the Four Horsemen turning heel now with Charles Robinson. No, they were still meant to be the faces. I'm thinking, what the fuck? So that was the resolution for that. So that was WCW Uncensored. What's your thoughts, Bubba?
Have you watched any of the other Uncensoreds from the 90s?
I haven't.
This is one of the best ones.
Fucking hell. Fucking
hell.
If
you haven't seen Uncensored, it was either 95 or 96. The one with the ridiculous, like, I want to see it. I want to do another Uncensored with you. I want to do 95 and 96 because this was the best one, arguably.
For fuck's sake.
I remember what 97 and 98, what happened to them, but I remember 95 and 96 were bad.
Yeah. I'll be honest, so like I said, I watched Nitros back in the day, but I don't think I ever watched many of the pay-per-views, probably World War III and Starcade, so a lot of the pay-per-views I actually didn't watch, so this is fun going to a show, which I didn't know any of the results. But if this is one of the best Uncensored, then call out for us.
Well, I can't remember what 97 and 98 were like, but it's definitely better than 95 or 96.
Wow.
Those two are absolutely awful. So I can be your, like, Uncensored person, because these are great.
This is officially the Uncensored, this is the Uncensored series with Bubba the Hate Sponge.
Well, it makes sense because it has to be Uncensored, because I can't stop myself from swearing either. So, like, that can be our theme.
I'm down with it. I'm down. So, yeah, we'll give out some awards.
Yeah.
So, cool. So, your match of the night.
The first match. The opening match.
Yeah. It was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good match, to be honest. And like we both say, we've both been fans of Kidman, and I haven't seen much of I know Mikey Ripwreck, and I've seen a couple of his matches towards the end of ECW. So I didn't watch any of his early stuff, but I watched it. I thought the guy could wrestle, so I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good match. I think we're both in agreement with that. Your moment of the night.
Probably Heenan turning his back on Schiavone.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to agree with you again.
Which doesn't say much because it wasn't during a match.
Yeah. I just hate Tony Schiavone. I just think he's terrible. So seeing one of my favourites of all time, Bobby Heenan, just basically, essentially telling him to go and fuck himself. I was like, yep, that'll do me.
Yep.
MVP of the night.
MVP.
We're not spoiled for choice.
Ralphus. no, I would say possibly. Because the only good match was the opening match, so...
Yeah.
Maybe one of the two of them. If not, the tire iron.
Who played an important role. Champions. Yeah, I would probably say, Mike Ripwreck. I was surprised how, like I said a few minutes ago, I always knew how Kidman was, but I didn't realize how good Ripwreck was. And this was his WCW debut. And
I'm just going to say, don't get your hopes up that a lot of his matches are that good, because Mikey Ripwreck isn't that good. So
no.
This might be your only pleasant surprise with him.
Fair enough. At least he's has won me awards tonight. He actually follows me on Twitter as well. So shout out, Mikey Ripwreck, if you hear this, you're invited to come onto the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't say that about you, Mikey Ripwreck. Oops.
Edit. right. Normally I have this award, but there wasn't many on show tonight. Your mullet of the night.
Barry Windham's hair was my favorite.
Yeah.
That weird bowl cut thing.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
It looked like, have you seen Kingpin?
Yeah.
Is it Randy Quaid? He's called?
Yep. Randy Quaid.
Plays like the Amish guy.
Yeah. Perfect. That was it.
I'll probably give mine to Chris Benoit, because it was just a nice slick back kind of mullet sort of thing. I'll give it to him.
He did have quite a mullet, didn't he? Yeah, he did.
So yeah, Bubba. So you've got a special treat tonight, because I was going to introduce this award in about two episodes' time when we finish 1990 for the end of the year award special. But we are spoilt for choice tonight. So what is your wooden spoon of the night?
Wooden spoon of the night? I think the entire main event was pretty awful. Like, I just can't express how much it did not make sense that the first blood and Flair's literally dripping in blood and it is still not the match isn't called. I would say the finish probably would be the worst part of the night. That or Vincent being in a match at all.
I agree with you, but I'm going to give it to Tony Shift fucking only.
Oh, fuck, no, Mark Madden. I forgot he was there, and he's like,
he would probably accept that award with pride, so we won't give it to him, because he'd probably think of it as a compliment.
He would, you're correct. He probably would, yeah.
No, for me, Tony Schiavone, fucking hate him. I think he's terrible. When I do watch AEW, I don't really hear him that much, because thankfully JR's on it. but whenever, he's just so fucking dry. One of the first shows I done on my podcast was Royal Rumble 90, and he was actually on it with Jesse Ventura on commentary. And Jesse Ventura would tell all these like jokes and things like that to try and make him laugh. And Tony was just so fucking dry, and I'm like, get a fucking personality. Thankfully, he didn't commentate WrestleMania, and he was gone soon after, thankfully, and I grew the Monsoon back. But I listened to it, he was, there's some moments he likes calling moves, I'm like, fair enough and that. But for as much shit as Michael Cole gets, and I'm not a Michael Cole lover at all, but I'm thinking he's nowhere near as bad as Tony Schiavone. So yeah, Tony Schiavone, he gets my wooden spoon of the night. And that's the end of the show, Bubbis. So do you want to plug your podcast and your social media channels and your YouTube channel?
Yeah. Okay. I am on Twitter at WCBub. And I have a podcast with my good friend at the Hibiki TMD. That's his YouTube channel, and our podcast is called Muted. And there's t-shirts. I have t-shirts now. You can get a Bubba t-shirt, which no one probably wants, but I bought one. So you should buy one.
And I found your channel. I think I just haven't found you yet, and I found your channel like a few days before, and I thought I'd give it a listen. And I enjoyed it. And like you said, you just literally don't give a shit what you're saying. You just tell it how it is. And I just, I respect people when they do that. So that's perfect for me.
There's a lot of podcasts and stuff of like recaps of SmackDown and Raw and whatever. And like there's so much wrestling on now that like, I don't want to listen to a podcast when I've already watched the show, or you know what I mean? I like things like yours, like going back and hearing stuff from like older pay-per-views and stuff like that. So we wanted to do something different and taking shots at people in the IWC, including DJ Storms, and just whatever like the hot topics are that people are tweeting about. You know, I just like having that, and I have no script. I have no notes. This is, tonight is the first time I've had notes for any of the podcasts I've done, because you sort of have to whenever it's a pay-per-view or whatever, but usually like all the rest of the episodes, the other guys have had stuff prepared and I'm just like, nope, I shoot from hip. I just say what I think about these tweets and these situations and whatever. And my favorite, like everybody likes the DJ Storms one. My favorite is the Nia Jax and Ryback one.
Yeah.
I just went off on both of them.
Yeah, they're both as bad as each other, to be honest.
Well, somebody tweeted today, it was, I think I saw it on like nodq.com, that Ryback defended Nia Jax and her botches. And I was like, wow, what an endorsement to get from Ryback about botches. And then I remembered that I had an episode that was, it literally featured the two of them separately. But I was like, oh yeah, I can plug this.
Yeah, she's she's just so fucking dangerous. And she done the interview, like I think they done like a Zoom call, like a few of the women wrestlers. And she was talking about Ronda Rousey, about her being dangerous. I'm like, are you fucking serious?
You need to listen to my episode of Muted on that, because I go into
I'll catch it. I'll go back and I'll definitely, but I'm definitely going to go back. I must have missed it by mistake, but I'll definitely go back and listen to it. But I'm thinking, are you being fucking serious?
Yeah.
She must know. She must know. And she thinks it's a gimmick. I'm like, it's not a fucking gimmick. You are fucking dangerous in the ring. You should not. The only reason you've got a fucking career is because your cousins were the Rock.
Yeah,
you happen to be taller than most girls.
Yeah,
you haven't got no fucking talent, and yeah,
she's not
yes,
like most girls.
Exactly, definitely, and I'm no wrestler, right? I've never been to a wrestling school or anything like that, right? I'm no expert, but I can tell when someone's like shouldn't be in a fucking wrestling ring.
Yeah,
she makes Mongo blush. Okay,
she's like a female Mongo.
I think that's a discredit service to Mongo. I used to think, me and Mags watched WrestleMania, and we was on about Sweet Sapphire, and he said she's possibly the worst wrestler he's ever seen. I'm thinking, I don't know if Nia Jax could give her a run for her money.
The thing that annoys me about Nia Jax is that it's almost like she doesn't care that she's doing this. And I've seen a lot of people now saying that it's a gimmick, that she's not actually injuring these people. And I'm like, did you see Kairi Sane's forehead?
Yeah,
that wasn't gimmicked, and people were saying that it was fake and whatever, and I was like, no, she is just a hazard in the ring. She doesn't know her own strength, obviously. Becky Lynch is genuinely to tell you that.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, she's trying to work with me, but it's like she's actually proud of it, and I'm thinking, how are you proud actually hurting people in the ring?
This is exactly what I said on this podcast.
anyone can do that. I can do that.
Yeah. But that's what annoys me the most, is that she
go to the rink and hurt people.
Yeah, she doesn't apologize for it, or like, because was it Sarah Logan, like, bust somebody's face open or something last year? I think she did, like, a running knee and actually connected. Did that happen, or did I make that? Was it her? Something happened anyway, and Sarah Logan did it, and she like apologized, or like took, you know, at least like took responsibility.
Was it
Dana Brooke?
Yeah.
Yeah. She did like a running knee, but actually hit her. And she actually like kneed her in the face and bust her open. But she like apologized for it. But Nia Jax has bust many people open and then tweets about it like she's proud of it and like in character. And I'm like, no, like to me, that's what makes me lose the respect for her. I understand you have to, like, blur the lines and you have to, like, play a heel and whatever. But when you're actually legitimately hurting people, Don't be going on a Zoom call and calling somebody else fucking dangerous.
Exactly. And if anything, Ronda Rousey, I miss Ronda Rousey. She actually carried Nia Jax to some half-decent matches.
But did you also notice in that Zoom call that everybody looked kind of awkward? Everybody was like, I think it was the Iconics, or was it Billy Kay? I remember watching somebody in particular, and I was like, yeah, they look awkward as fuck because they know that she's just talking shit.
Yeah.
And I know they all like her, and they all probably don't, you know, want to say anything bad about her, but I would be concerned if I was wrestling with her.
Well, they're all friends, and it's like, you know, whenever you've had a friend yourself, for example, and they've said something stupid or done something stupid, and they're really proud of it, you're thinking, should I say something, or it's my friend, I don't want to, you know, tear them down, so it's probably that's why it was.
Yeah.
But cool. But yeah, thanks very much for joining me, Bubba. I'd love to chat more, but I'm recording another podcast in about 40 minutes.
You're okay. It's fine.
I'm recording with Kevin, and he's from Philadelphia. So it's like, it'll be like 7 p.m. over there, so we'll make up the time zone differences.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again. And definitely, I'm going to have you back if you want me to what do you call it, go on another uncensored trip.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And if you need a fair hand or something to come and help you, you and your podcast partner out, I'll be happy to come on to your show and give you my views.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, we'll get something set up.
All right. You have a good night, brother. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.